Okay, apart from genetic methods of looking at this, gene therapy, how else, what kind of can we do now?
Yeah, so we can also use chemical activators, because there's one way, just let's put more protein in. Another strategy, well, let's use the protein that we already have, that our cells are already making, and make it more active. Because SIRT6 is an enzyme, so we can activate it enzymatically. We can potentially also try to trick cells into making more of it, but that's kind of a different approach. Or we could increase the activity of the enzyme. We are also exploring it, and there are several companies that were looking for chemical activators of SIRT6. So here we had some edge, because SIRT6 is an enzyme, and it has two separate enzymatic activities. One is called deacetylation, so it removes acetyl group from other proteins. And another one is ribosylation, it adds a ribose group. So there are two activities. Both are important for various cellular functions. But what we showed, it was, I don't remember if we discussed this study last time or not, that in human centenarians, we found a variant of SIRT6 that has ribosylation activity enhanced, but not deacetylation. And from this, we concluded that this is the activity we really want to go after, because acetylation is important, no question about it. And I believe it's particularly important early on, during development, when, you know, genome has to properly function to make a baby correctly. But during our, you know, subsequent life, adult life, perhaps ribosylation is what becomes more critical for longevity. But all of the initial screens for SIRT6 activators were focused on deacetylation. And we started looking for activators of ribosylation. So we are doing it right now. We are screening. But from the activators that were discovered previously, we just tested them, because they all were discovered as deacetylation activators. And we thought, okay, let's check. Maybe some of them do both. Maybe some of them activate both. And one of them did both. Because most of them really did nothing to ribosylation. They were only targeting one activity, that's it. But one was activating both. And that's a very interesting molecule called fucoidin that is derived from brown seaweed, which is very safe. People eat brown seaweed. It's sort of a staple of Asian cuisine in Japan and South Korea. People consume a lot of brown seaweed in soups and other other appetizers. And so we got kind of excited, because these are countries with highest life expectancies, and they eat a lot of this. So we really started investigating further the effects of fucoidins from seaweed.
So I understand that that not all the fucoidin works, right? It's quite a complex molecule that can be like different.
That's correct. So fucoidin is kind of a family of molecules, and their backbones are similar, but they are not the same in every algae species. There are differences in the structure, how those sugar moieties are organized relative to each other. And we've been testing various isolates of fucoidins, and not each one activates SIRT2 and 6. We found maybe every third does. Others, they have no effect. We even had some that inhibit SIRT6.
So do you know what the kind of mechanism of action is? Like, why it's different?
Well, probably because they have different structures.
Right.
And we are trying to figure out why.
Right.
We don't know this minimal structural unit of fucoidin that's important. And we are working with sugar chemists right now to identify this structural unit. And I hope that once we succeed, then we can make a better drug out of this. But right now, we can just eat seaweed.
Right. Okay. So I believe you tried fucoidin in mice as a SIRT6 activator, right? Because as you said, like the previous one was genetic. So
yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what you saw with fucoidin in mice?
Yeah, that's actually very exciting. The results exceeded our expectations. We started giving fucoidin to aged mice, sort of middle-aged, not very old, but about 1.5 years of age. And we just kept them on this supplement, and we had control group of mice that didn't receive fucoidin. And then we were measuring their frailty scores every month. We measured the inflammatory cytokines in the blood and the physical activity, like, the walking speed and grip strength and various parameters. And there was clear benefit for the mice taking fucoidin. It was very clear. It continued. And then I think an update to our previous conversation, mice in fucoidin group actually survived longer, so it even had effect on lifespan.
What kind of dose were you giving them? Was it something that a person would be able to mimic?
Yes, it wasn't too high. Well, we started from sort of crude preparation of fucoidin. It wasn't ultra pure because we wanted it to be kind of similar to what humans would take, because you can make ultra pure fucoidin, but then it would be cost prohibitive. So we took partially purified kind of crude preparation, not just ground up seaweed, but first purification steps, and we were giving it to mice mixed with their chow diet. So it wasn't a huge dose. I think for a human, translating the dose between mouse and human is not linear, and it's kind of difficult to say, because we are much larger and that we have different surface to volume ratio. But I would say approximately 4 grams of fucoidin would be similar for a person.
So for do not age, right? Do you test their fucoidin?
Yes. So yeah. We test their samples to make sure that they activate SIRT6, and then they call it SIRT6 activator.
Right. So I saw in one of your papers that you talked about the activation of SIRT6 requiring fatty acids, or at least being enhanced in the presence of fatty acids, I believe. So first of all, is that correct? And would there be any advantage? Would that talk about when you should take a SIRT6 activator to try and have like fatty acids around at the same time?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We haven't tested it in mice because, potentially we could try to further give them different diets with the fatty acids. So fatty acids, they were shown to activate deacetylation activity. We didn't, I think we tested it with ribosylation. We didn't see much of an effect. Although I don't know how that would play out in combination with fucoidin. That's again something to try. So could be tried potentially. It's really interesting, but it seems that various sort of treatments or diets that from people believe to be healthy, and that there is evidence like calorie restriction, even not similar intermittent fasting, many of them activate SIRT2 and 6. Of course, the effects may be quite mild, but we see very interesting relationship that often, well, if we know that these types of fatty acids are good and like other studies show they're good, and then, oh, we find they activate sirtuin-6. So sirtuin-6 really seems to be this kind of hub controlling many processes related to aging. And this is why just healthy lifestyle is good. But obviously we want to have stronger effects, and this is what we get with Fucoid and SIRT6 activator.
So one of the things SIRT6 does, I believe, is that it's part of the fixing the transposons, is helping package the chromatin. So basically helping with the epigenetics. So I saw you also said it would be interesting to kind of combine SIRT6 with reprogramming, with like Yamanaka factor reprogramming. Could you talk a little bit about that? And A, is that correct? And B, could you talk a little bit about how that would work, or is SIRT6 working totally differently from the Yamanakas in terms of the way that it handles
these? It is a difficult question you're asking, and we've been thinking a lot about this because SIRT6 is doing something similar in a way that it rejuvenates the epigenome. So our epigenome gets disorganized as we age, and this may be the driver of aging altogether. But how do we rejuvenate it? Because what Yamanaka factors are doing, they just take everything and kind of completely redo it. They just bring us back to this embryonic form. And that is dangerous intrinsically, because when cells lose their identity, they can then turn into cancerous cells. And this is why people working on reprogramming, they are working to develop strategies where you do it just a little bit. You don't go all the way. You don't turn our cells into embryonic cells, which would be lethal. But we just do it just one step, two steps, but not all the way. What SIRT6 is doing here is, you know, similar in a way that it rejuvenates, but it really doesn't change the fate of the cell. It doesn't even try to do it. So there is no danger of losing cell identity, because with respect to transposons, SIRT6 just goes in and recognizes transposons. We don't completely understand how, and condenses them into heterochromatin. It doesn't try to rewire the whole system. So in this way, Yamanaka factors work, you know, in a very dramatic way. They just change everything. SIRT6 just comes in, and there are some places that loosen up and it tightens.
Right. So it's working in a totally different way. So like combining them may not
So help. Combining them, yes. So to the question of combining them, initially we thought that, well, perhaps we could try to combine them. We've done some preliminary experiments in that way. And in some ways, SIRT6 may actually prevent Yamanaka factors from doing what they want to do, because SIRT6 doesn't want to allow the genome to completely rewire. So in a way, they could be antagonistic to each other. It can, if let's say we wanted to complete reprogramming, to take a cell and turn it into embryonic stem cell, so SIRT6 would actually be an impediment to this process, because it wouldn't let the whole epigenome to open up and then assume new structure. If we only want to do it in partially, so there may be benefit in combining them. So maybe SIRT6 would not let the cell reprogram completely, which is not what we want in the case of somatic rejuvenation, but maybe it will kind of limit. So this is something we actually want to study in the future. So that's on our list.